Good afternoon. It's 4:30 and 50 degrees here in Moorhead. This is Mountain Edition. I'm Leanne Akers.
And I'm Jonathan Burton.
Lawmakers are pushing to end daylight savings time.
A House bill on medical marijuana could get a vote this week.
Time is running out on a bill proposing a red flag law.
Severe weather is hurting industry in Ohio.
Flu cases are still on the rise in Kentucky.
Crews are working to clean up a trail derailment.
The Sheriff's Department in Breathitt County now has an approved budget.
In sports, several 16th region teams are in action tonight.
Bud Luke has the stock report.
A 40% chance of showers tonight with a low around 29. We'll have a look at your region's extended forecast after this news.
Clocks will spring ahead again next month, and many lawmakers across the country are pushing for them to stay there. Adjusting to daylight savings time has been blamed for spikes in heart attacks and car accidents as people get used to a new sleep schedule. A survey from the Associated Press shows that 70% of Americans want to put an end to switching the clocks. So far, a handful of states have passed bills to make daylight savings time permanent, according to USA Today. However, the states still need approval from the federal government to enact that change.
A House bill for medical marijuana could see the House floor this week. HB 136 moved from the House Judiciary Committee 17-1 last Wednesday, but the bill that's headed to the House is being called too restrictive by some supporters. If passed, the bill would still make smoking medical marijuana illegal. LAX 18 reports medical marijuana supporter Eric Crawford told the committee why he wanted to see the law changed.
I'm a criminal in this state. If House Bill 136, medical cannabis, were to pass and become law in Kentucky, I would not be a criminal. A lot of other people wouldn't be either.
Other supporters agree the new bill is too restrictive, but believe the state is heading in the right direction. If HB 136 passes the full House, it will head to the Senate, where it is expected to see the most scrutiny. Medical marijuana is already legal in 33 states.
Governor Andy Beshear has joined a bipartisan group of lawmakers to push for a cap on out-of-pocket costs for many Kentuckians relying on insulin. The bill has cleared a House committee and awaits action in the full House. House Bill 12 would limit out-of-pocket costs to $100 per prescription for a 30-day insulin supply. That cap would apply to people with commercial health insurance plans. About 500,000 Kentuckians are diagnosed with diabetes. Beshear calls it a health epidemic. The bill supporters say some people can't afford insulin and ration supplies because of costs.
State officials are seeking secondary feedback on a plan to guide career and technical education. The Strengthening Career and Technical Education for the 21st Century Act was designed to guide Kentucky's standards in education over the next 4 years and track its progress. After one round of feedback, officials are looking to fine-tune the proposal so it can be submitted and reviewed by Governor Andy Beshear's office. Stakeholders have the opportunity to share feedback on the revisions through March 1st. After the plan is reviewed, it will be submitted to the U.S. Department of Education in April.
Time is running out for backers of a proposed red flag law to restart the conversation about gun control in the 2020 Kentucky General Assembly. As WUKY's Josh James reports, the Senate's top Democrat is still crafting a bill, and few are expecting it to gain much traction.
Up to this point, most of the discussion about red flag laws has occurred outside the House and Senate chambers, as gun rights groups have rallied against the idea and concerned parents have lobbied for it. Last week, Moms Demand Action set up shop in the Capitol Rotunda. Kentucky chapter head Connie Courtney said red flag laws help.
When a family finds themselves in crisis with a loved one is potentially going to harm themselves or others, it gives them or law enforcement a temporary ability to remove firearms. There's robust due process with it.
But deep skepticism of anything considered gun control is likely to hamper any real progress for a bill. Senate Minority Floor Leader Morgan McGarvey says he's still working on the bipartisan legislation. Lawmakers have until the end of the week to make new bill requests. Tuesday, March 3rd is the last day to file new Senate bills. In Lexington, I'm Josh James reporting.
The cleanup of a train derailment is ongoing in Pike County. Four tanker cars containing ethanol were emptied and moved to a staging area on Monday. The current goal is to remove three engines at the site, which is expected to be completed by Wednesday. Melissa Collins is a resident who now lives next to the site and told WYMT it's been difficult adjusting.
They got us in a room, but we can't constantly stay there. It's impossible. My kids go to school in Elkhorn. I'm having to keep my dogs in and out. It's hard to get in and out of here. It's been stressful. And you don't want to complain because you know the situation, but it's been a mess.
Water sampling throughout the area will continue with no current reports of contaminated local drinking water.
Some of Ohio's biggest industries are beginning to feel the onset of issues such as severe weather due to climate change. The severity of weather is affecting industry giants such as auto suppliers, farmers, and manufacturers. President of the Business Forward Foundation, Jim Doyle, says companies depend on Ohio because of its access to key waterways, ideal climate for corn and soybeans, and fast-moving global supply chains.
Ohio is an economic juggernaut, and Ohio's economy is based on how central it is and how efficient its infrastructure is. And severe weather threatens that infrastructure and threatens that competitive advantage.
The rise in severe weather has been damaging to plants and equipment and is also damaging consumer demand for products. Ohio companies are now mitigating costs, but this will only get harder as the situation progresses.
The number of confirmed flu cases is climbing again in Kentucky. WMKY's Wyatt Melton has details.
After peaking in mid to late December, flu cases briefly dropped off, but they're back on the rise now with roughly 2,000 new cases reported last week. That marks the third week in a row the cases have been on the increase in the state. Total cases number just over 17,200, and 50 people have died from the illness. The numbers far outweigh any current threat from the coronavirus outbreak originating in China, which has infected only a handful of Americans so far. For WMKY News, I'm Wyatt Melton.
We'll have a look at more of your region's headlines right after this. Support for MSPR comes from the Mountain Arts Center, presenting the Tedeschi Trucks Band in concert 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, February 25th. Award-winning vocalist Susan Tedeschi and husband Derek Trucks, a 15-year veteran of the Allman Brothers Band. Grammy Award winners, the Tedeschi Trucks Band, on tour supporting their latest release, Signs. The Tedeschi Trucks Band at the Mountain Arts Center, 7:30 p.m. on Tuesday, February 25th. Tickets and information online at macarts.com. The Breathitt County Sheriff's Office recently laid off its entire staff due to budgetary issues. However, an emergency meeting held Monday by the fiscal court may have saved people's jobs. The meeting covered the county clerk and sheriff's budget and concluded with the budget passing by a 3-2 vote. Judge Executive Jeff Noble felt parts of the budget could have been removed due to concerns over potential layoffs. Noble told WKYT the only way to resolve the situation is to push through.
It's going to put us in a bad situation. But, you know, I'll come in tomorrow and do the best I can, work everybody as long as I can. When it comes to laying somebody off, it's a hard decision, but if I have to make it, I will.
Employees that were laid off were expected to return to work today.
Police are looking for Sheena Baxter of Scott County. According to Baxter's sister, Krista Crumley, she stepped outside of Crumley's home on Friday night and never came back inside. The Scott County Sheriff's Department has received a missing person report from Crumley and is currently investigating. Crumley tells WKYT there isn't enough information to go on.
It was 7:30 Friday night. It was still kind of light out at that time. It wasn't completely dark. Someone had to see something. I want more help. I know we need more help because we don't even have no clues.
The search and rescue group Texas Equisearch has offered their help to the case, but is currently waiting on the Sheriff's Department to approve their assistance.
Lexington police have made another arrest in connection to a house shooting that occurred last week. 44-year-old Jason Eggerson was arrested on February 12th, along with Ronell Cornelison. Both were charged with wanton endangerment. WKYT reports the two men were in a car on Mirror Lake Drive when a firearm was discharged into a home. That home had been targeted by gunfire multiple times in the same week. The incident occurred during the same week Lexington experienced a string of gun violence, including the death of a teenager, Antoine Roberts. Police have made no arrest in connection with the homicide.
A Pikeville woman has been sentenced in federal court for production and distribution of child pornography. Mountaintop News reports 31-year-old Christina Brooke Mitchell will serve 35 years in federal prison. Mitchell was arrested in June 2018 after Pikeville police received a complaint she had sexually explicit photos of one of her children on her phone. Mitchell was initially charged in Pike District Court, but was later indicted in U.S. District Court. She pleaded guilty last August and admitted that she took explicit photos of two juvenile females and sent them to another person, Jonathan Manigault. Manigault pleaded guilty in the case last September and admitted to asking Mitchell to sending him the images. Manigault will be sentenced in April. Under federal law, Christina Mitchell must serve 85% of her sentence, or just shy of 30 years, before being eligible for parole. She will then be under supervision for the rest of her life.
Kentucky State Police are looking for a 16-year-old boy who went missing Sunday after running away from his grandparents into a wooded area in Knox County. WYMT reports KSP began its search at the Thomas Walker Park. The teen is described as 6'3" and 185 pounds with a medium build. He also has brown hair, brown eyes, and a scar on his left cheek. He was last seen wearing blue jeans and a black jacket. Police say he is not from Knox County and was visiting family. Knox County Emergency Management searched through Sunday night and into Monday morning. Another active search started Monday afternoon. Anyone with information is asked to contact Kentucky State Police post 10.
Taking a look at your region's weather, this afternoon a 70% chance of showers, cloudy with a high near 52. Tonight a 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 29. Wednesday mostly sunny with a high near 42. Wednesday night increasing clouds with a low around 28. Thursday scattered flurries, cloudy with a high near 35. Thursday night mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming mostly clear with a low around 18. Friday sunny with a high near 41. And Friday night clear with a low around 18.
Taking a look at temperatures around the region, it's 47 degrees in Lexington, 48 degrees in Winchester and Mount Sterling, 51 in Ashland and Grayson, 53 over in Inez, and here on the beautiful campus of Morehead State University, it's 50 degrees. On our feature segment today, Kentucky's primary election is a long way out, but with the troubled Iowa caucuses getting the process off to a rocky start, WUKY's Josh James spoke with the University of Kentucky's election expert, Joshua Douglas, about voter confidence and what officials can do to win some of it back.
Obviously, the Democrats are still reeling a bit from the Iowa situation. We have another round of caucuses coming up in Nevada. How worried should they and we be about a repeat of some of those same problems?
Well, I think the concern is about the tabulation process and the technology that the Nevada Democrats are using. But I think there's a broader message here, which is that we shouldn't be demanding immediate results. You know, I think one of the problems in Iowa is that, you know, pretty shortly after the caucuses ended, the media was kind of demanding results and starting to say things like, you know, something's amiss or this is a debacle just because they didn't have the results in time. And I think what that led to was the media then rushing the Iowa Democratic Party the next day, and then they made mistakes. And so I think we all need to take a step back and realize that we may not get results right away, and that's actually perfectly normal, and that's election administration working. And so we need to take a deep breath and let the process play itself out.
Is that a difficult thing to do in the age of Twitter? It seems like if we don't know something immediately, the sky is falling.
Yeah, but it shouldn't be. And I guess the message is election administration takes time, and doing it, to do it correctly takes time, especially when you have a political party doing it and not the election professionals like in the other states that are running primaries. You know, in both Iowa and Nevada, it's the state Democratic Party that's running the system. And the biggest concern I have is when you start seeing delays and you all of a sudden assume that that means the worst and that there's something, you know, really amiss going on, where it could be just typical ballots are taking a while to get processed and to be counted up.
Is that the biggest liability, you think, of having political parties run elections, that it's sort of fertile ground for anyone who has a conspiracy theory?
Well, I think there are other problems with having the political parties run the caucuses as well. You know, they're not professional election administrators. So, you know, they're adopting things on the fly. The Nevada Democratic Party was going to use the same app that the Iowa Democratic Party used, and now they've switched and they're using Google Forms instead, essentially, along with a call-in backup system. And, you know, this is not how professional election administrators who've been planning for this for a very long time and do a year in and year out do things. So I do think we need to question the caucus system in general. I mean, you know, the caucuses are by and large fairly undemocratic and unrepresentative to begin with, and then having the political parties run them adds additional problems, and then having the public and the media demand results right away adds a third layer of problems.
Are we at an all-time low in voter confidence? How bad is it out there?
I think it's hard to know. I mean, you could look at statistics and surveys of voter confidence. But what I would say is that we shouldn't be so nervous about the integrity of our system. You know, there is not massive voter fraud out there. It just doesn't happen. There's conspiracy theories that are thrown all over the place, and people hear anecdotes of things. But just as a factual matter, election voter fraud is not a major problem.
How do you feel officials can win back some of that trust? It seems like the system is now so complex. And as you said, we have a president normalizing the questioning of vote tallies. Is there a way to get this genie back in the bottle? And if so, how?
Well, there's lots of ways to do it. I think we need to adopt systems that really encourage voter participation, make it easier and more convenient to vote, moving towards a vote center model where you don't have to go to your home-based precinct and go to any vote center in the county, which a lot of states do, moving towards more vote-by-mail ballots. Because what we'll see, I think, is that as voter turnout goes up, people will start to regain confidence in the system, as long as those convenience measures are also done carefully and with an eye towards making sure that they're secure.
Well, I have been speaking with University of Kentucky election expert Joshua Douglas. Thanks for your time.
No problem.
For the full interview, check WUKY.org. For WUKY News, I'm Josh James.
It's 4:48 and 50 degrees here on the beautiful campus of Morehead State University. I'm your Mountain Edition host, Leanne Akers, here with Jonathan Burton and Cody Robinson, and we're coming to you live from the Larry Netherton Studio right here in the historic Breckenridge Hall. Thank you so much for joining us on this rainy Tuesday afternoon. Ty Martin has a look at sports right after this.
Support for MSPR comes from the Community Recycling Center, offering paper and document shredding services for Morehead and Round County residents, community groups, businesses, and industry. Secure, confidential, and HIPAA-compliant, drop off or pick up by appointment at 784-1250. That's 784-1250. Located near the Morehead City Park, the Community Recycling Center, keeping the environment clean and green. 784-1250, Facebook and online at moreheadrecycling.org.
Several 16th region teams will be in action tonight as the regular season winds down this week. For WMKY Sports, I'm Todd Martin. Taking a look at girls' action, Wes Carter travels to Ashland Blazer and Menifee hosts Morgan County. Both those games are set to tip off at 7:30 p.m. In boys' regional action tonight, Lewis County travels to Augusta, Raceland travels to Cabell Midland, West Virginia, East Carter hosts Bath County, Morgan travels to Fleming, Menifee hosts Estill County, West Carter hosts Ashland Blazer, and Elliott County hosts Russell. All seven of those games are set to begin at 7:30. South Carolina's women remain number one in the AP women's basketball poll this week. Louisville jumped back up to number five after wins over Notre Dame and North Carolina State. UConn fell to number 6 in the poll, ending a run of 253 consecutive weeks in the top 5, and Kentucky moved to number 14 after upsetting Mississippi State on Sunday. In men's AP college basketball, Louisville took a tumble in this week's poll. The Cardinals fell 6 spots to number 11 after they dropped a pair of ACC road games last week. Coach Chris Mack's team will try to turn it around when they host Syracuse on Wednesday and North Carolina on Saturday. Meanwhile, Kentucky move up 2 spots to number 10 in this week's poll. Kentucky is on the road tonight for an SEC basketball matchup with LSU. The 10th-ranked Wildcats come into the game having won 8 of their last 9 games. It will be a tough challenge for Kentucky as LSU is unbeaten at home in conference play. Here's freshman forward Keon Brooks.
They're a real big physical team. They have a lot of size. They try to post our guards. I can see that happening, or and then also just trying to keep them off the glass. They're a big athletic team, so I feel like if we just continue to fight, box out, and just be solid, we'll be fine.
Tip off in Baton Rouge is at 9 p.m. For the second consecutive week, Morehead State women's basketball, Ariel Kirkwood has been selected as the Ohio Valley Conference Freshman of the Week. WMKY's Greg Jenkins has the story.
The OVC announced the honor on Tuesday morning after the 6-foot guard distinguished herself from other league rookies during the previous week by posting back-to-back double-doubles in games against Eastern Kentucky and Murray State. For the week, Kirkwood averaged 11 points, 10 rebounds, 5 blocks, and 2 assists. In Thursday's setback against EKU at home, Kirkwood tallied 12 points and 10 rebounds while blocking 5 shots and dishing 2 assists. In a hard-fought loss at Murray State on Saturday, the rookie turned in 10 points, 10 boards, 5 blocks, 2 assists, and 2 steals. Kirkwood becomes the first Morehead State freshman to post consecutive double-doubles since Ariel McKee did so during the 2014-15 season. Kirkwood and the Eagles will next take the court on Thursday as they begin their final homestand of the season at Johnson Arena. Morehead State will take on Belmont at 5 p.m. on Thursday before welcoming Tennessee State on Saturday at 1 p.m. For WMKY Sports, I'm Greg Jenkins.
Morehead State softball got its season underway over the weekend, winning 2 games against North Carolina A&T and dropping 2 against Charlotte. The Eagles are back on the practice field this week. Second-year coach Samantha Jones says hitting will be a major point of emphasis.
Definitely going to be focusing on just with our hitting, of going more east-to-west pitches and being more consistent with the outside and the inside pitches. The girls did a really good job laying off pretty high pitches and the changeups, and so we just want to get more consistent on hitting harder hits with both inside and outside.
MSU is on the road again this week. They head to Conway, Arkansas for a weekend slate of games against Jackson State, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, Southern Mississippi, and Central Arkansas. Morehead State baseball hits the practice field this week after dropping 4 games to Michigan State over the weekend. The Eagles struggled to manufacture offense against the Spartans. First-year head coach Mike Aoki says he expects the team to get on track quickly and will be working on getting the offense up to speed this week.
We've got good hitters in our program, and I'm very, very, very confident that those guys will get the thing turned around really quick. Just get them some more reps this week and work on the timing issues that we had a little bit.
The Eagles travel to Norfolk, Virginia this weekend for a 3-game series against Norfolk State. First pitch for the opener is Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. And finally in sports this afternoon, less than a week after an investigation was opened into FC Cincinnati's head coach Ron Jans' alleged use of racial slur, Jans officially resigned Monday evening, according to the team. On Friday, Major League Soccer announced they were investigating a complaint that Jans made extremely inappropriate comments. According to 2 sources close to the team, the investigation stemmed from Jans using the N-word in front of players earlier this preseason. And that's going to do it for sports. For WMKY, I'm Ty Martin.
And support for MSPR comes from MSU Athletics, online at msueagles.com. Men's and women's basketball will host Belmont on Thursday, February 20th, and Tennessee State on Saturday, February 22nd. Tickets and more information from the Eagle Athletic Office at 783-2089 or online at msueagles.com.
Good afternoon from the National Offices of Robert W. Baird. This is Bud Luke with your closing financial markets report for WMKY. The Dow Industrials fell for a 3rd consecutive day as investors wait a stark warning from tech giant Apple. And the Dow did finish with a loss of 165.89 at 29,232.19. The broader market not as weak. The S&P 500 was down 9.87 at 3370.29. And the NASDAQ Composite, on the back of strength in tech giants such as Amazon and Google, finished up 1.57 at 9732.74. Among your other tech giants today, Netflix was strong as well, finishing up almost 2%, and Netflix actually reached its highest level since July 2018. Alphabet, which is, of course, the parent for Google, gained 0.1% to eke out an all-time high, and Tesla also contributed to the NASDAQ gains, rising more than 7%. Apple, although it was down 1.8%, did finish well off of its session lows, and Apple did caution it does not expect to meet its quarterly revenue forecast, citing slowed production and weakened demand in China as a result of the coronavirus. And this news also sent some of their supplier stocks down. Skyworks Solutions was down 1.9%, while Xilinx was down 1%, and Corvo dropped 2.6%. Investors also sold stocks today in favor of traditionally safer assets, such as Treasury bonds and gold. The benchmark 10-year U.S. Treasury yield fell to around 1.55%, and gold futures for April delivery climbed more than 1%, settling above $1,600 an ounce, which was gold's highest level since 2013. In the commodities markets, oil itself was down less than 0.1%, finishing at $52.07 a barrel. And, of course, as mentioned, gold very strong today, gold actually finishing at $1,605.90 an ounce. In Europe, stocks were down somewhat, with the Stock 600 index down 0.3%. Most Asian markets were down to a greater degree than Europe, as the Nikkei was down 1.4%, and the Hang Seng in Hong Kong was down 1.5%. Turning now to stocks of local interest, it was Community Trust Bank down 46 cents at 43.48. Kroger up $1.49 at 29.72. It was CSX down 8 cents at 79.51. Marathon Petroleum down $1.29 at 56.46. And PPL Energy was up 53 cents to finish at 35.90. Reporting from the national offices of Robert W. Baird, this is Bud Luke.
Support for MSPR comes from Papa John's Pizza in the Patrick Center, Moorhead. Papa John's made-to-order specialty pizzas include the Meats, the Works, Tuscan 6 Cheese, and many more. Side items include garlic parmesan breadsticks, cheese sticks, chicken wings, and poppers. Desserts include chocolate chip cookie and double chocolate chip brownie. For pickup and delivery in Moorhead and Round County, Papa John's can be reached at 784-3551 and online at papajohns.com.
Taking another look at your region's weather. This afternoon, a 70% chance of showers, cloudy with a high near 52. Tonight, a 40% chance of showers, mostly cloudy with a low around 29. Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 42. Wednesday night, increasing clouds with a low around 28. Thursday, scattered flurries, cloudy with a high near 35. And Thursday night, mostly cloudy, then gradually becoming mostly clear with a low around 18.
Taking a look at some events coming up around the region, the Kentucky Transportation Cabinet will host a community forum to discuss safety improvements along U.S. Route 60, including crash history, existing conditions, and road improvements. The meeting will be held at 5 p.m. on Thursday, February 20th at Farmers Christian Church.
Four Paws for Ability and Moorhead State University's Service Dog Program will visit Coffee Tree Books on Main Street in Moorhead from noon to 2 p.m. on Saturday, February 22nd. Early readers can practice their skills and the service dogs can practice listening. The event is free and open to the community.
The MSU Concert Choir is hosting a chili dinner and concert on Thursday, February 27th at First Baptist Church in Moorhead. Dinner begins at 5:30 p.m. and the concert is at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are $10 for adults and $8 for students. Proceeds support tours by the MSU Concert Choir and chamber singers.
The Moorhead Theater Guild will host auditions at the Round County Arts Center for its spring production of Motherhood Out Loud. Auditions will be held on Monday, February 24th at 7:30 p.m. and Tuesday, February 25th at 6 p.m. For more information, contact Diana Reeder at 784-5669.
And that's going to do it for Mountain Edition this afternoon. Today we had help from Tanner Boyd, Joe Lewis, Greg Jenkins, Paul Hitchcock, Eden Jordan, Michael Green, Wyatt Melton, Nacogdoches Miller, Lori Likens, Cody Robinson, and Ty Martin. WUKY's Karen Czar, KNN's Paul Miles, The Robert Baird Company's Bud Luke, And our feature segment today came from WUKY's Josh James. Our theme music is composed and performed by Allison Brown. This is Moorhead State Public Radio, WMKY Moorhead, Kentucky. Our show is archived daily on the web at WMKY.org. For Jonathan Burton and all of the MSPR News team, I'm Leanne Akers for WMKY News. All Things Considered is coming up next. It's 5 o'clock.